This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 23rd of August 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 22nd of August 2019, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The headlines this week are: protesters stage die-in over M3 revamp proposal, empty homes, and jailed for not aiding police murder probe. So we will start with the story behind the first headline.
The protesters staged die-in. Dozens of Green campaigners staged a protest in Winchester to oppose a £100 million scheme for the M3. Members of the local branch of Extinction Rebellion took to the High Street on Saturday, urging passers-by to object the plans for Junction 9, Winnell. More than 30 people joined in, with some handing out leaflets and talking to spectators, a few giving speeches, and the rest creating a die-in, a technique in which climate change rebels lay on the ground and pretend to be dead. A spokesman said, "It's a difficult issue to talk about, but the point of the protest is to show that Highways England are doing what they always do. They haven't conducted enough, there's been no rural research, and the quality of their assessment of the scheme has been dreadful. They don't monitor the carbon dioxide levels on the M3, which alone is bad enough." The spokesman added, "Wider roads attract more traffic, and people are always going to drive at faster speeds, 70 miles per hour if they can. You always see Extinction Rebellion in London. Big organisations always hit the capital first in countries around the globe, but it's great to see such a successful protest being held here in Winchester. Extinction Rebellion alleges Highways England is not being fully open about its proposals, which are open for public consultation until the end of the month. The agency wants to revamp the interchange of the M3, A34 and A272 at Winnell. The A34 southbound link would pass the M3 with a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit. County Councillor Jackie Porter was at the protest and told the Chronicle, "I've been to lots of meetings and spoken to a lot of people that share similar views to Extinction Rebellion, and I think what they have to say will have a huge impact on both the city and county councils. It's time to put the money where the mouth is and meet the targets set when a climate emergency was declared. It must be achieved. It is also very heartening to see so many young people, children and adults here, all expressing their views and recognising the global issue that is climate change. The public can express opinions on the plans by visiting the Highways England website, where a consultation form is available."
Empty homes. More than 4,000 houses across Hampshire lie empty, with 701 in Southampton alone, new figures have revealed. It comes as a survey found 278,018 homes have sat empty across England, Scotland and Wales for over 6 months. Southampton has the second highest proportion of empty homes in Hampshire, with 7.8 in every 1,000 homes lying empty for at least 6 months. In the New Forest, the figure is 5.6 in every 1,000 homes. Southampton came second in the county, with Portsmouth having 939 empty homes. Across the county, there are 4,138 empty homes, with 438 of these in the New Forest. The survey was produced by insurance company Admiral, combined with government figures and freedom of information requests to local councils. The insurance company estimated that houses which have been empty for between 2 and 4 years in Southampton have a combined value of £21,420. Noel Summerfield, no, I'm sorry, that's completely wrong, a combined value of £21,420,000. Noel Summerfield, head of home insurance at Admiral, said, after seeing reports that the number of empty homes in England had increased in recent years, we decided to look at where housing stocks were being mostly underused by analysing and ranking the proportion of long-term vacancies across councils in England, Scotland and Wales. The data was gathered through public government data sets and freedom of information requests to 427 councils in England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland on February 2019. The figures follow government data being released in December 2018 show that there were 756 long-term empty homes in Southampton last year. That compared to the previously reported figure of around 550 in 2016, meaning the increase is one of around 35%. Speaking at the time, Chief Executive of Homelessness Charity Society of St James, Trevor Pickup, said he was surprised at the figures.
Jailed for not aiding police murder probe. A Winchester man who refused to hand over the passcode to his iPhone after being arrested as part of an investigation into the targeted assassination has been jailed. Bricklayer Aston Annis was stopped by police and arrested after Gurinderjit Raj's body was discovered in a black Ford Fiesta that was parked in a lay-by in Corehampton. Portsmouth Crown Court heard that Mr. Raj, 41, had suffered 2 shotgun wounds to the head, one to his chin and the other the temple, and was then left in the parked car close to the Corehampton Golf Club in Shepherd's Farm Lane. The day after his body was found, police stopped Hannis in Winchester while he was driving a black Audi and discovered a number of phones in his vehicle. When detectives asked for the passcode to an iPhone X they believed to belong to him, the 28-year-old, who strongly denies any involvement in the death of Mr. Raj, refused to hand it over. The court heard that he was scared and feared that if he helped police, he would be the next person to have bullets in his head. Judge James Waddington QC told Hannis of Wolford Close, Stanmore, there was no alternative but to jail him for his failure to assist with the investigation into the killing of Mr. Rive. Representing Hannis, Fabian Macy told the court her client had refused to hand over his passcode over fears for his own safety and for his family. She said, Mr. Hannis strongly denies being involved in the death of Mr. Raj, and no stage was any evidence put to him by police linking him. He is scared. He told police that he tells you that now and through me. This was a targeted assassination of Mr. Raj as a result of organised drugs crime. He clearly states that if he had given access to his phone, he would have been the next person to have bullets in his head, or his family would have been at risk. This is not him exaggerating. Hannis admitted withholding information requested under the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which gives police the authority to demand access to electronic devices of suspects if they believe there is relevant information on them. Police are continuing to investigate the killing of Mr. Raj, several men being arrested in connection with his death. As previously reported, a 31-year-old man from Winchester and a 41-year-old man from Oslebury were arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to murder, while a 25-year-old man, a 28-year-old man and a 29-year-old man, all from Winchester, and a 31-year-old man from Eastleigh were arrested on suspicion of murder. They have all been released on police bail, pending further inquiries. Paying tribute, his family said, Gurindajit was a devoted father to his two young children and a loving fiancé to his partner. He adored his parents. He had an infectious sense of humour and would always find the best of any situation. He was a principled man and would always be the first to offer help to those that needed it. He would be missed dearly by all his family and friends.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Bell, Susan Elizabeth Bell, née Reeks, on the 8th of August, aged 67. Bright, Martin Frederick Bright, Lieutenant Colonel Royal Navy, retired, on the 3rd of August. Dobson, Alan Richard Dobson, on the 8th of August at Flowerdown Care Home. Gosling, Anthony Colin Gosling, known as Tony, on the 11th of August at Southampton General Hospital. Hadaway, Raymond John Hadaway, on the 10th of August, aged 69. Haywood, Norma Haywood, on the 11th of August, aged 83. Holder, Barbara Mary Holder, at Abbots Barton, on the 13th of August. Johnston, Alan David Johnston, on the 13th of August. Mags, Gerald Austin Mags, known as Jerry. There's no other information about when he passed away. And Neville, Albert Michael Neville, known as Mick, on the 8th of August, aged 79. Now we have Christian comment.
Yes, I believe in the Catholic Church, and this is from Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of Winchester Cathedral. One of the great wonders of Winchester Cathedral is that we get a taste of Christian history in every century since the 7th. Recently, I was given a tour that focused on the Anglo-Saxon features. The tour revealed new treasures that we simply did not know were there. It reminds me of the words Jesus spoke. Every teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out his storeroom, new treasures as well as old. Matthew chapter 13, verse 52. As the altar stone on the top floor of the new Kings and Scribes exhibition demonstrates, we can reach back in history to the foundations of Old Minster in the 640s. In those days, they were closer in time to the foundation of the Christian Church in the Eastern Mediterranean than we are to the founders of our cathedral. As we read in the Acts of the Apostles and the other New Testament letters that were sent between those first churches, we get a sense of the rapid spread of the gospel between cities and cultures. I am taken aback by the thought that the words of a wandering rabbinic prophet of the first century, Jesus, gained traction in this country, first in Canterbury, and then through St. Berinus from Dorchester to Winchester. By the 7th century, the three creeds of the Church, the Nicene, the Apostles, and the Creed of Athanasius, refer to the Catholic Church and the Catholic faith. Catholic, in this sense, means universal, the Church that is the true Church of Jesus Christ, which is greater than each individual congregation. Later, the sense of what it means to be Catholic developed. Like a piece of rock that has the same lettering all the way through, the Catholic Church can be tasted at any point you cut into it. The whole of the church can be found in part of the church. To be Catholic also means that all people, all races, languages, nations and cultures are welcomed into the part of God's society. Just as the whole of humanity is made in the image of God, so all of humanity is called to be part of his church. This was demonstrated by the inclusion of the West Saxons into the church by St. Marinus in the 7th century. People who had little common culture and language with Palestinian Christians. This means that the church is called to be diverse and to reflect the whole of society that it serves. This can be a challenge because, as we all know, birds of a feather stick together. We prefer to talk to people like us. The Christian calling, however, is always to reach out to people who are not like us, to engage with difference and to appreciate diversity. We become more of who God wants us to be when we connect with different cultures.
We now move on to letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, by emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Quite a crop of letters this week. Inevitably, planning issues predominate.
And the first one is from Keith Lehman, who is the chairman of the City of Winchester Trust. And it's entitled Trust's Views. Sir, in light of the meeting of the City Council's Scrutiny Committee last week to discuss an amended outline planning application and other issues relating to the station approach site, and that decisions on the development will be taken at the Council's Cabinet meeting at the end of the month, the City of Winchester Trust would like to make the following comments. In March 2019, the County Council and the City Council adopted a joint movement strategy for Winchester, whose first priority is to reduce city centre traffic. This document recognises that the biggest traffic problem in the city is caused by in-commuting car trips, 16,000 a day. Upon taking office, the new administration at the Council quickly declared a climate emergency for the city and also announced it would be reviewing proposed major developments planned on key sites. Traffic in the city not only causes pollution, but together with the traffic paraphernalia, creates barriers for pedestrians and devalues the public realm. The Trust was pleased that the Council would be putting sustainable development and sustainable movement at the heart of its thinking. But is this really happening? Although charges have been made to the proposed Carfax development, i.e. station approach, which include reductions in office car parking and in the height of the office buildings, there will still be 95 car parking spaces provided for employees in the new offices. The plant and screening on the roof of the main office building will be reduced in height by 2 metres, and there are also minor changes within the body of the scheme to enhance active frontages along public routes. On the parking issue, the Trust believes that there should be no car parking on this site. In such a sustainable location next to the railway station, close to the city centre and within walking and cycling distance of residential areas, the Council should be leading by example. On the one hand, the Council is supporting more park and ride sites and measures to encourage more sustainable ways of getting to work. Yet on the other hand, it's actively promoting employee car parking on its own city development site. On the question of height and bulk, Historic England, the South Downs National Park Authority, the Trust, and many others consider that both the overall scale and height of the offices is too great and will have an adverse effect on the character of the townscape and conservation area and the setting of the city. The amount of office floor space being proposed is significantly in excess of the figure set out in the design brief for station approach development. We believe strongly that there are solutions to the design problems on this important city site, which the Trust urges the new administration to consider. All car parking, proposed below ground and at podium level, should be removed from the development. Underground car parking is very expensive and completely unsustainable in this location. This would mean that the entrance to the proposed underground car park in Gladstone Street would be removed, allowing this street facade to be redesigned to be more in keeping with the scale of the existing area. What is needed here is an active and animated street frontage rather than a dead frontage at street level. A good solution here might be single aspect south-facing apartments or terraces to complement the terraces on the other side of the road. The offices should be lowered into the space where the podium car parking is, with a further reduction in office floor space made to satisfy townscape concerns. The Trust urges the new administration to instruct officers to secure further changes to the Carfax proposal before the application is approved and before the site is sold off to a developer. This is the only way to prevent a development which is unsustainable and too large. So writes Keith Lehman, Chairman, City of Winchester Trust, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
And another letter on the same subject. This is written by Richard Baker, and it's headed "A Poor Brief." Sir, it is disappointing and worrying that the outline planning application for the development of station approach site, Carfax, has been made on the basis of a poor brief and with little regard for the context of the site. The original design brief from 2015 for station approach required an allocation of office floor space divided between the cattle market site in Andover Road of 7,425 square metres and the Carfax site of 5,575 square metres. Now the entire allocation has been transferred to the Carfax site. This amount of office floor space is being sought by the City Council when the adopted local plan policy on employment does not set out a target for employment needs. The architects have been given a difficult task of accommodating over 13,000 square metres of office floor space on the Carfax site with a design that complies with the guidance set out in adopted High Quality Spaces, SPD, produced by the City Council in 2015. The mass, height and form of the outline application scheme in the context of Winchester neither maintains nor enhances the character of the city. The application has not engaged with the City of Winchester movement strategy. With 5 million passengers a year using the train station, there is much movement around the site by pedestrians, buses, traffic and taxis. The hope is that the detailed development of the movement strategy will reduce the amount of traffic in the city centre, with a review of the one-way system and the creation of more pedestrian areas and streets north of the High Street. The development of this site has a key contribution to make towards the reshaping of movement around the station in the context of the emerging movement strategy. With honest reappraisal and a collective desire and imagination between councillors, town and transport planners, there is an opportunity to regenerate the station approach area in terms of movement and building design that can set a fine example for the other regeneration projects in central Winchester and River Park to follow. And this is written by Richard Baker of Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Right, this is a letter from Simon Lever, headed "Sooner the Better." Sir, As a resident of the Winchester area, I never take for granted the wonder of living within walking distance of the city and the proximity of the countryside. Winchester is not unique in being subjected to the architectural vandalism of the 1970s, but has fared better than most towns and cities. Looking around Winchester's centre and witnessing the most dreadful concrete monstrosities that in their day were considered the norm should be taken into consideration when planning any new development. Station approach has attracted much criticism and every issue addressed only to be followed by another. Winchester is a major attraction for businesses which provide much economic benefit, and in the case of station approach, £81 million and 1,000 jobs. People can commute by train from other regions. Extending park and ride will also reduce the number of automobiles having to park nearby. Considering the pollution concerns, reducing the number of parking spaces may be premature as electric or solar-powered vehicles become more popular. Small, medium enterprises are the lifeblood of Winchester, providing jobs and contributing to the general welfare of the city and its citizens. Station approach is a most positive and much-needed development, and, as with any delays, such projects cost money. The sooner it's given the go-ahead, the sooner the positive benefits can be enjoyed by all. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Winchester.
A Wide Berth is the title of this letter from James Anderson. Sir, cyclists deserve to be given a 1 metre clearance by passing traffic because they are, quote, entitled to their wobble, unquote, as a judge said years ago. If only cyclists would extend the same courtesy to pedestrians who are similarly entitled to their meander. The effect is that a mixed-use path of less than 3 metres, such as on Worthy Road, won't do. Both Les Sherry and Andy Key, Chronicle, letters August the 1st and August the 15th, make clear the issues. But then the Worthy Road path is unnecessary, a consequence of ineffective county councillors. There is the footpath known as St Swithin's Way along the Itchen from St Mary's in Kingsworthy to Abbots Barton, where it joins the bridle way of Nuns Walk. It should be a cycle route right to the centre of Winchester and a potentially valuable contribution to leisure. Just 1 kilometre of path needs to be upgraded to bridleway, yet county councillors are full of excuses, such as, quote, the landowner doesn't like it, unquote. Really? At the same time, it's planned to build a longer cycle path from South Wanston to Andover Road at a cost of £304,000. For what? About 5 or fewer daily cycling commuters. One might describe it as a path from nowhere to nowhere. Whatever happened to the Hampshire County Council policy of prioritising maximum benefit for the most people? Both paths lie in the Itchen Valley Division, whose councillor is Jackie Porter. What is going on here? That's from James Patterson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
And another letter about cycling, but this time it's from Councillor Rob Humby, who is the Deputy Leader, Executive Member for the Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council. And it's headed Misleading. Sir, your article claiming that Hampshire is the most dangerous place in the UK for cyclists is worryingly misleading, based as it is on wholly incorrect and incomplete data provided by an injury claims company. The report was compiled from Freedom of Information requests sent to police forces, to which only 28 responded, which means that data from 15 areas in England and Wales is completely missing, and by lumping together areas taking no account of highways' responsibility, it lazily tots up large geographical areas as inevitably having worse accident records than smaller areas. Like all local authorities, Hampshire County Council uses verified data from the Department for Transport, the most recent of which, 2017, shows that of the 17,000 cycle accidents in the whole of the country, 429 of these were on Hampshire County Council roads, amounting to 2.5% of the total, not the 10% erroneously claimed in your article. Of course, any accident is one too many, and safety for all is our priority. Our road safety engineers undertake comprehensive analysis of all accident data and produce detailed statistics to identify locations where safety can be improved through casualty reduction measures, with a sharp focus on those needed for the safety of cyclists, pedestrians, and motorcyclists. Additionally, we regularly run road safety campaigns that educate and remind drivers and cyclists how to travel safely in order to reduce the number of incidents on the road. We also offer a comprehensive programme of road safety training in schools, which includes cycle training. And that letter, as I said, is from Councillor Rob Humby.
And this is a letter from James Miller, headed Road Madness. Sir, supporting road building in a climate emergency is literally throwing petrol on the fire. For too long, we've been told that building roads solves problems, but the reality is it just creates them. There is a plethora of evidence that expanding road capacity creates induced demand. Journeys are made that simply wouldn't have been made previously. Even the Department of Transport acknowledges this. This means that within a few years, additional capacity fills up and emissions increase proportionately. But that's only half the story. For every pound we spend increasing road capacity, and subsequently our carbon footprint, we could have spent it on sustainable transport, such as bus and train networks, that would actually reduce congestion and carbon emissions without the need to increase capacity. The M3 Junction 9 scheme may cost up to £100 million, which could, for example, buy over 200 buses. This would literally transform travel in Hampshire, reducing road congestion and, most importantly, reducing our carbon footprint, of which a staggering 60% in Winchester already comes from transport. Moreover, if money like this was diverted from road schemes up and down the country, we could fundamentally transform travel across the whole country, making a huge contribution towards reducing our carbon emissions. The reality is that road building makes little sense at the best of times. In a climate emergency, it's complete madness. And that is from James Miller, Wheatland Close, Winchester.
Peter Hargreaves writes about Tory rebels. Sir, Steve Brine deserted the Conservative government when he resigned as Health Minister, leaving Health Secretary Matt Hancock high and dry. He has now further compounded his infidelity by joining the group of Tory rebels determined to defeat the government in a no-confidence vote, or whatever it takes to stop Brexit. This is not what he was elected to do by Winchester Conservatives, and he is staining Winchester's reputation by helping to create a constitutional crisis that could have far-reaching consequences, including Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party taking over the reins of government. At the last PM's question time, Brine was the only MP in the chamber not wearing a tie, and he was slumped in his seat as to be openly displaying his disinterest in the proceedings. He had counted on his mentor, Jeremy Hunt, winning the leadership election and a quick promotion for him into the comfort of the Foreign Office instead of the hard slog he had encountered as Health Minister. He had failed, and he must have realised that he severely damaged his future prospects in government. Should he, during the difficult times ahead, vote against the government, as the rebels are planning, then he must have the Conservative whip removed, which means he would not be able to stand as a Conservative candidate and the inevitable general election. Winchester Conservatives must now drag themselves out of their political stupor and start searching quickly for a new MP. Steve Brine is no longer worthy of representing Winchester and must go. That strong letter is from Peter Hargreaves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Well, there's another letter about Steve Brine. This is written by Karen Barrett, and it's headed Fanciful. Sir, however fanciful the notion of Steve Brine MP joining the Lib Dems, I cannot agree with Mike Collis in Chronicle Letters of the August the 15th that his record as a junior health minister is not in line with Lib Dem values. What exactly are Lib Dem values, which would make Winchester's Tory MP an unsuitable recruit? The damaging cuts to welfare benefits and public services and the erosion of the NHS, which Mr. Collis quotes as evidence against Mr. Brine, were facilitated by the votes of his Lib Dem colleagues in the coalition government. In addition to enabling the austerity policies which arguably influenced the referendum result, Lib Dem support was crucial in passing the disastrous Health and Social Care Act of 2012, which resulted in private companies like Virgin Care and the Priory Group obtaining NHS contracts worth £9.2 billion last year. It may suit the Lib Dems to rebrand as their party to save the nation, but their values don't appear to have changed. New leader Joe Swinson, who was happy to serve in the Cameron Osborne government, draws the line at engaging with the leader of the main opposition party in trying to stop a no-deal Brexit. It comes as no surprise that she puts party interests first and, given her voting record in coalition, clearly has little in common with the Labour Party dedicated to reversing the effects of 9 years of Lib Dem oblique Tory policies, which has seen a rise in child poverty, a growing wealth gap, and increasing NHS privatisation. And that letter was written by Karen Barrett of Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And here's a letter from Bob Whittier, stuck in traffic. Sir, a paragraph in your sister paper, the Daily Echo, about a person who lives local to Boomtown, stated that he was in a queue on the A31 for an hour. Well, excuse me, but he would have known that there was likelihood of a lot of traffic, so why did he not find a better route? Personally, I think he deserved to be held up, but not to complain about the outcome. And that was Bob Whittier of Church Lane, Easton.
Say it like it is.
Absolutely. This one is entitled Blocked Drains. And it's so from the sublime to the ridiculous. And it's by Mike Green. Sir, the drain shown in the picture on page 55 of last week's Chronicle is not the only blocked drain in the town. There are at least four in Badger Farm Road between the Sainsbury's roundabout and Oliver's Battery Road growing vegetation. And I think there is another one just above the railway bridge in Rumsey Road. That's from Mike Green, Ted Down Meads, Winchester.
I must go around counting blocked drains. It's obviously the thing to do. Sorry, I've got another letter here. This is written by Tim Rowry and it's called Worn Out. It's also about roads. Sir, I refer to last week's article introducing Elliot, the road patching dragon. Just over 2 years ago, we had such a machine patch repair, six potholes on the quiet lane between Chilbolton and Barton Stacey. They have all totally failed and need further repair. However, there is the benefit of reduction in speeding traffic, but it comes at a high price to pay when it comes to the wear on our car tyres. That's written by Tim Lowry, Newton Stacey, Stockbridge.
And here's a letter from Dorothy Quinney. Be aware of lengthy renewal times. Sir, may I make readers aware that it now takes a minimum of 8 weeks to apply for or renew a disabled parking badge. It then takes a further 2 weeks after approval and paying the £10 fee before the badge is issued. You are not notified that your badge is due for renewal, so please act in good time to get a new one. Do not be tempted to use your out-of-date badge until the new one arrives. Enforcement officers are not allowed any discretion. Even if you leave a note to explain the situation, you will get a ticket. That's from Dorothy Quinney, The Avenue, Bishop's Waltham.
We have items of historical interest from 100, 50 and 25 years ago.
And the first one is 100 years ago. That's Saturday, August the 23rd, 1919. The Mayor of Winchester had the privilege of flying at the kind invitation of the Mayor of Southampton on Sunday last. The service was arranged by the Supermarine Aviation Company, who have been experimenting with flying boats for several years past. The afternoon of Saturday was devoted to giving flights to a considerable number of invited guests, chiefly members of the Corporation of Southampton.
50 years ago, Saturday, August the 23rd, 1969. The 1,200,000 Kingsworthy, the 1,200,000 pound Kingsworthy Link Road designed to relieve traffic congestion in Winchester was officially opened on Wednesday, 2 months ahead of schedule. The event was described by the Mayor, Councillor S. Spicer, as a red letter day for Winchester. But he added that the public expected value for their money and warned, now that this is open, heavy through traffic will either stay out or we will see that it is kept out by order. The new road, which consists of 21 miles of 24-foot wide dual carriageway, connects the A33 Winchester Bypass with the A34 Winchester Newbury Preston Road to the Midlands and the North. It is designed to cope with an estimated 19,000 vehicles a day by 1983, 20% of this being heavy goods vehicles. There are 11 bridges on the new section, which is connected to the existing road system at either end by flyovers.
And this is 25 years ago, from Friday, August the 19th, 1994. Parking problems at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester will ease with the opening of the new multi-storey car park on September the 1st. But there's a sting in the tail for hospital staff who will have to pay minimal parking fees from April. An additional 320 spaces will be available on the site, bringing the total number of spaces to approximately 1,100. The opening of the 6-level car park should come as a relief for patients, visitors and staff who faced parking difficulties and wheel clamping in the past. The hospital says major improvements are also being made in other parts of the hospital site to offer patients and visitors free drop-off and short-term parking closer to wards and departments, which will greatly enhance access to such facilities. Rod Halls, Chief Executive of Winchester and Easley Healthcare NHS Trust, which manages the hospital, said, "We are very pleased that we will be able to offer much improved facilities for our patients. Parking has been the single biggest source of complaints, so we are delighted that we've had the opportunity to invest in a development which will largely resolve those problems. The last few months have been even more difficult for patients, visitors and staff, as the main car park has been closed during construction work.
Now we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. That will be followed by a letter from Winchester, a letter from Westminster by Steve Brine, and then finally First Person.
So the editorial comment entitled Chronic Problem, Empty Homes. It is with a great sense of déjà vu that we once again report on the number of homes sitting unoccupied across Hampshire. Unfortunately, they are still numbering in the thousands, whilst residents struggle to get onto the property ladder or secure a roof over their heads. In the report on page 62, figures show more than 4,000 homes, 701 of those in Southampton, aren't being used. Although that Southampton figure is marginally down on the numbers reported in December 2018, it's still well above the 2016 figure of 550. There have been strong words issued in the past about bringing these homes back into use, given the homelessness crisis taking hold across the country. But this data clearly shows that they've not transformed into actions. It has not gone unnoticed that this news comes at the same time as construction begins on hundreds of new homes in Whiteley. Whilst the new homes are desperately needed, it can be a long and drawn-out process finding the appropriate site and getting planning permission.
And our letter from Westminster, which is written by Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Charles Ford. My constituents know that, in addition to our family holiday in Devon, I use Parliament's annual recess for my summer tour. We've already visited Winchester Village, Sainsbury's, Hairstock and Kingsworthy, but in addition, this year, as we approach what promises to be a lively session at Westminster, I'm carrying out a summer tour survey. I'm keen to hear your views on my hashtag priority NHS, the issues where you live, how you hear from me, and the things you'd like me to raise using my experience from the back benches. Issues such as education, following my recent Schools in Winchester debate, as I attempt to persuade ministers, we need a new long-term increased funding settlement. See more and take part in stevebrine.com/summertour 2019. Of course, that lively parliamentary session will be dominated by the Brexit endgame, and I will be using every ounce of my experience from a near decade in Parliament to question and challenge the government. Seems to me, and we've just returned ourselves from the sandcastles and ice cream, the whole nation is burying its head in the sand ahead of reality bites next month. Who can blame them? Obviously, I can see that we live in an age of social media-driven populism, where dog-whistle clarion calls such as Leave Now or Stop Brexit cut through. But I think our country, and dare I say Winchester, deserves better. I realise my opponents have the luxury of taking a position from either end of the debate, but as an elected MP, I have to be more responsible than that to represent all of my constituents. And that's extremely difficult with some who want it delivered at all costs and others who still can't and won't accept the referendum result. While I recognise that it doesn't fit on a T-shirt, the necessary step for every MP is to support a safe exit from the EU and stop playing games in the name of principle and virtue, behind which really lies only naked party politics and self-interest. To move on, everyone is going to have to accept the compromise is still not a dirty word. However, we got there, the referendum had a winner, and Democrats everywhere need to accept that. Equally, and here I find myself weirdly agreeing with Nigel Farage, for a civilised democracy to work, you need the loser's consent. Put another way, it's time for generosity in defeat and magnanimity in victory. And here's the truth. No deal is not a destination. It's a stage. There will be a deal sooner or later, given the UK is EU's single biggest export destination. And the EU single market is our closest and largest trading partner. And that's before we get onto supply chains, intelligence sharing and security. The question is whether it is agreed before October the 31st, highly preferable to my mind, or whether we must negotiate it from outside. That is why I am pro-deal and put my money where my mouth is, voting three times for one and resigning from my job I loved in the government. This is a nation I serve and a parliament I believe in, but it's time we MPs stepped up and moved things forward, because head in sand is not a sustainable policy and there's a great view to be had if we just open our eyes.
Right, now this is an article by Khaled Aziz, headed Crime and Punishment. 20,000 more policemen, 10,000 more prison bases, £100 million for airport-style prison security. I hadn't expected to return to law and order so swiftly, but given this flurry of policy announcements from Mr. Johnson's government, and ignoring suggestions that such announcements presage an autumn election, get your pencils ready, let's take them at face value. All the usual suspects, from Diane Abbott to Nigel Farage, have predictably weighed in. But what we poor benighted citizens want to know is, will it work? Prison places first. The UK has more people banged up per 100,000 than anywhere else in Europe. So why jail even more? Of course, plenty more could be in prison. We know that judges have been instructed to avoid clogging up the prisons wherever possible. One great quote I heard came from an American sheriff. He averred that you should jail only criminals you feared. All the rest should have alternative punishments. In other words, jail should primarily be used for public protection. Certainly, tagging and community orders can be useful alternatives for those we don't fear. And there's little doubt that when it comes to rehabilitation, prison has had limited success. Indeed, there's evidence that prisons serve as crime colleges, where petty felons learn at the feet of the masters how to commit even more heinous offences. All this ignores the other two functions of prison sentences, deterrence and justice for the victim. Deterrence seems to work amongst those of us who see ourselves as law-abiding. I suspect you'll go to prison is a thought that's often stayed the hand of those who would commit crime, but it's probably the shame of a criminal record that's the real deterrent, not just the possibility of incarceration. Then we're left with justice, which sadly, and often fanned by the calorific winds of the tabloid press, usually means revenge. Now, I'm no softy when it comes to crime, and I have personal experience of violent crime when all you want is to see the perpetrator suffer, and often to a greater extent than the crime itself. But once you calm down, you eventually remember the teachings on forgiveness. Forgiveness is more beneficial for the victim than the criminal. Letting it go has real therapeutic effects, although I know that it's hard to see through the red mist of the immediate aftermath. So, what is the solution? Firstly, let's not let criminal off the hook. They should pay for their crimes, literally. Courts are great at handing down judgments, but useless and apparently indifferent to ensuring that victims are properly and effectively compensated. The judicial system seems rather pompously to be more worried about contempt of court than contempt of victim. Anyone who's had a cash-related civil judgment in their favour knows that, and Welshers are allowed to get away with not paying. So it should be with criminal cases. A sentence returning the guilty to the community, but insisting on and enforcing compensation to the victims over a long period of time might give low lives in our increasingly venal society more pause for thought. Of course, none of this works if the criminals aren't caught in the first place. So an increase in police officers is to be welcomed. But again, if it's just more of the same, that would be a pity. Petty crime is irritating, but there's evidence, see New York, that when there's a zero tolerance to small crimes, this has a knock-on effect by reducing bigger crimes. Drugs are apparently moving out of inner cities to small towns and villages. One Hampshire district police officer told me recently that county lines was his biggest issue. Nailing those who blight the lives of our children is vital. After that, what to do with the dealers? Just banging them up clearly isn't working.
You might like to know about the Colebrook Club, which is for people experiencing sight loss. The club holds monthly meetings in Winchester with interesting speakers and a chance to meet other people with similar sight problems. The club aims to entertain and inform, to guide members to other sources of assistance, and generally help them with the problems that sight loss brings. If you would like to know more, contact either Sheila on 01962 866 506, that's Sheila on 01962 866 506, or Muriel on 01794 388 483, that's Muriel on 01794 388 483. Sunrise and sunset. The sun is rising these days around about 6:05 in the morning and setting at about 8:10 in the evening. If you yourself would like to send, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. We now continue with items of general news interest.
And new course helps taxi drivers to spot abuse. Winchester taxi drivers have completed a safeguarding course to spot signs of exploitation, domestic abuse and human trafficking. The government has issued guidance for consultation recommending licensing authorities make safeguarding, child sexual abuse and exploitation awareness training mandatory for all licensed taxi and private hire drivers. Winchester City Council has made it compulsory for all private hire and taxi drivers to attend a new 3-hour safeguarding course. The first course, is held on July the 23rd at King's Community Church in Hedge End, was attended by 27 drivers and 12 representatives from taxi licensing authorities. Designed and run by the Blue Lamp Trust, the police-approved classroom-based course supports the government's aim to increase awareness among drivers. Chief trainer on the course is Marty Farrow, who is a former police trainer and co-owner at Farrow Risk Management, a Portsmouth-based company. He said, "The very nature of their role brings them into contact with a wide range of people, some of whom may be at risk. Passengers often talk to the driver and may raise concerns, or a driver may suspect there's a safeguarding issue. By taking safeguarding training, drivers are made aware and are then in a position to make that phone call, and that call may save an at-risk person from abuse." The course covers identifying children and adults at risk, recognising types of abuse, associated signs and indicators, identifying suspicious activities, and knowing how and where to report concerns. David Watkins, Business Development Manager at the Trust, said, "The course is being run to educate taxi drivers so that they understand what safeguarding is all about, understand their responsibilities, know what to look for and how to report any issues. We have got off to a fantastic start and we hope that more authorities will see the benefit of the course and the good that can come from having taxi and private trained in how to recognise safeguarding issues and how to report any concerns."
Demolition of historic railway house is rejected. Plans to demolish a piece of Winchester's railway heritage has been turned down by city councillors. Developer Kevin Netherwood of the Clydesdale Group applied to knock down Prospect House on Magdalen Hill to build four new houses on the plot. The Victorian building was the station master's house for the Winchester Chesils station on Southampton to Newbury Railway, which closed to passenger traffic in 1960. There were few, if any, objections before the Chronicle highlighted the application, alerting the City of Winchester Trust and sparking opposition. In the end, the coverage led to 20 objections and 2 in support. The City Council planning officers recommended refusal, and the councillors on the planning committee rejected the plan by 8-0 last Thursday. In their report to the committee, the planning officers said the proposal would lead to substantial harm of the conservation area as a heritage asset and the total loss of significance of a building which has been determined to be undesignated heritage asset, contributing significantly to the character and appearance of the street scene. It has not been demonstrated that substantial harm or total loss is necessary to achieve substantial public benefits that outweigh that harm or loss. Geraldine Buchanan of Elm Road Full Flood spoke against the plan, stating the historical importance of the house. She told the Chronicle the house should be listed, and she said understood that the developers had been unaware of its historical importance. She hopes the developers will leave the house alone and develop the rest of the plot. The developer said the proposal would make better use of an underutilised site and create more residential dwellings in a sustainable location. So I can't get my words out today. So that's actually the end of the item. This is accompanied by 2 photographs, one of Prospect House as it is at the moment, very attractive red brick Victorian house, but another very attractive sepia photograph of Winchester Chesil Station of 1885. And you can see the station and the signal box and Prospect House in the distance and the tunnel. And, of course, the only thing that remains now is Prospect House and the tunnel itself, which is still there. And the area covered by the station is now Chesil Street Car Park.
And this is an article headed, "New Research Project That Senses a Smell." A Hampshire charity that supports people with smell loss is preparing to launch the biggest ever research project of its kind into the condition. Absent, based in Stockbridge, has revealed it will launch the Sense of Smell project, a collaboration between patients with smell disorders and scientists. It's estimated that over 13 million people in the UK could be suffering from smell loss or a distortion of smells. The Sense of Smell project requires people to submit their experiences via the Absent website, www.absent.org, where the data will be analysed by 2 world leaders in the area of smell disorders. The charity hopes bringing people's experiences together and identifying cluster will lead the way to the development of healing strategies to support patients. Chrissy Kelly, founder of Absent, said, "Smell loss changed my life, my personality, and my view of the world. It is a unique bereavement, impossible to put into words. I felt untethered from my daily experience. By the time the patient gets to the doctor, the problem has often spread beyond the nose, altering the quality of the person's life and relationships. We don't just need doctors, we need strategies for self-help and self-care. By launching the Sense of Smell project, I hope we can unearth much more information about smell loss and people's experiences, so more can be done to support patients. Smell loss is a condition that can affect a nerve in the brain and can feel like invisible disability, while research to support those affected is limited. Sufferers can feel anxious about the dangers of being unable to smell gas or smoke, and isolated due to a loss of intimacy with close family members. Smell loss also affects a person's ability to experience flavour, which can alter their relationship with food and lead to weight issues. Hazel Harrison from Soberton in Hampshire was diagnosed with hyposemia in 2016. She said, "It's really damaging to how you experience life because so much is about food and socializing, and taste and smell is massively important to that. It's like living in a world that is just black and white. When I do get occasions when something comes back, it's like walking into a world of color, and the rest of time I'm just in a bubble, because I don't get the same sensory experience that everyone else gets."
Charity seeks grant applications. Local papers are at the heart of their community, which is why the Hampshire Chronicle is pleased to announce that they are once again offering cash for good causes in that community. The Gannett Foundation, part of the Hampshire Chronicle's American parent firm, provides funding to registered charities in areas where NewsQuest publishes local newspapers and websites. The focus is on charities with projects which take a creative approach to fundamental issues such as neighbourhood improvements, local problem solving, economic development, youth enterprise, sport and healthy living, assistance to disadvantaged or disabled people, care of the elderly, environmental conservation and educational or cultural enrichment. And incidentally, we did apply for a grant from the Gannett Foundation last year and did receive some funds, which went quite some way in buying new sovereign playing boxes. So we will, I think, at the next committee meeting be deciding whether we're going to apply this year.
Grants nurture the seeds of local history. In its latest six-monthly round of grants, the Hampshire Archives Trust has awarded more than £19,000 for six projects. A major grant of £8,000 has gone to the new Victoria County History, which, under the guidance of Dr. John Hare and Dr. Jean Morin, has the long-term objective of rewriting the history of the entire county. The money will go to finance the publication of its latest short on Heriard and Southrop near Basingstoke. This is the product of a dedicated group of researchers. The Hampshire Record Office will now be able to catalogue the records of 120 different women's institutes with the support of a grant of £4,200. These are from all parts of the county, including Blackwater and Fleet, Highclere, Southwick and Lee Park, Bewley and New Milton, as well as Winchester. At present, scattered within the Hampshire Record Office collections, these records will now be brought together to tell the story of the WI in Hampshire from 1917 to 2016. A permanent digitised record of one of the most intriguing archaeological excavations of recent times has been funded with a grant of nearly £1,200 for the Hyde 900 community dig in the gardens of houses in Hyde, which uncovered significant traces of the medieval abbey. The money will also help to record the construction of Hyde Abbey Gardens. The King John's House and Tudor Trust, Romsey, has received £2,800 to enable it to conserve and study an important bargain and sale deed of 1571. It will also go to the design and production of a cabinet to ensure its preservation in the setting of the house itself. Fleet and Crookham Local History Group received £1,500 to buy a major collection of postcards of the area collected over many years by the late Percy Vickery, author and former member. These were acquired at auction by a dealer who agreed to hold off selling them if the necessary funds could be raised. Rare films never before publicly screened will be shown in venues throughout the county between September and December by the Wessex Film and Sound Archive, courtesy of a grant of £1,500. They show the role of women in building components for Spitfires in one of the many shadow factories of the 1940s and include recording of former employees. HAT Chairman David Livermore said, HAT continues to make a real difference to local organisations' projects. As always, a rigorous examination of all documentation submitted was made with an assessment of how far they meet HAT's aims and objectives. A number of main grants applications have been received, and unfortunately, while all were of merit and deserving of support, some hard decisions had to be made because HAT could not afford to support them all. The deadline for the next award round is December the 31st.
This is an article headed Heat Advice for Pet Owners This Summer. The RSPCA received a surge in the calls about animals in need as the heat wave swept across England and Wales last month. Temperatures hit the mid-30s in Hampshire, and the heat could possibly return in forthcoming weeks. Now, the animal welfare experts and vets are urging pet owners to keep their animals safe and asking the public to take care of wildlife. A spokesman said, if your pet slows down, looks dazed, drools or pants excessively, vomits or even has a seizure, then please speak to a vet as soon as possible, as these are all symptoms of heat stroke. If your pet is elderly, overweight or has ongoing health problems, or problems caused by extreme breeding, such as flat-faced dogs, then they can feel the effects of the heat more quickly, so please keep that in mind. The charity advised that you use pet-safe sun cream on dogs and cats, as well as ensure animals have access to shade and fresh drinking water at all times. Keep fish tanks directly out of sunlight and check horses regularly for fly strike. They advise to buy a cooling mat, wrap an ice pack or frozen water bottle in a tea towel or use damp towels for your pets to lie on. Some exotic pets, such as snakes and tortoises, are good escape artists, so check vivariums are secure and take care if allowing reptiles to exercise or bask out in the garden. RSP animal welfare expert Dr. Samantha Gaines said, with the summer holidays underway, lots of families will be heading off on holiday or planning days out with the whole family, and this might include Fido. During the hot weather, we'd urge pet owners to think twice before taking their dog out with them, as they can really struggle out and about during the heat. So often it's best to leave them at home in the cool. If you'll be out in the sun all day at a festival or show, or if you're planning a long walk or run, please leave your furry friend at home with access to water, shade, and someone who can check on them. It can be hard enough for us in the heat, and it's much more difficult for them.
And following on from that article about advice, this one is entitled Watch Out for Drunk Wasps. Wasps on the hunt for a sugar hit could pose a risk to children and the elderly during the school... Never mind about the drunk wasps.
Stung, I expect.
I'll read that paragraph again. Wasps on the hunt for a sugar hit could pose a risk to children and the elderly during the school summer holidays. The British Pest Control Association, BPCA, is urging families and businesses to act now before sting incidents become more likely in late August and early September. The association has published an online guide with a short video to help prevent problems with the pests. Technical officer at BPCA, Natalie Bungay, said, "Homes and businesses can be affected by a wasp outbreak, particularly as people head outside for the summer season. Towards late August and going into September is the time when we can start to see drunken wasps desperate for a sugar fix. This happens when the queen stops producing eggs and the workforce has nothing to do other than look for fermented fruits and sugars. Wasps quickly get inebriated, and this is typically when you can expect them to be more aggressive and likely to sting." The new Worried About Wasps guide gives an overview of information, including biology and behaviour, prevention and control. Ms. Bungay said, "If snacks are eaten outdoors, then food and drinks, as well as the natural environment, all provide an attractive place for wasps to thrive. A high level of wasp activity can be distressing, and if someone is stung, the presence of wasps can be seen as detrimental to public health. This particularly applies to children, elderly people, those with allergies, and pets, who can be very sensitive to wasp stings. The matter becomes serious if a sting sends someone into anaphylaxis, a potentially life-threatening allergic reaction."
Review opens into abuse at 1970s to 80s church camps. An independent inquiry has been launched into the Church of England's handling of allegations against a barrister who allegedly assaulted boys. John Smythe, QC, who died aged 77 last year, was accused of attacking boys at his Winchester home, who he had met at camps in Dorset in the 1970s and 80s, and was being extradited from Zimbabwe after the allegations arose in 2017. The inquiry began on Monday. Keith Makin, a former director of social services, is leading the review into the events at the Irwin Minster camp. Those who claim to be the victims will be encouraged to give evidence at the inquiry. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, worked at some of the camps as a young man in the 1970s, but said he knew nothing of the abuse. In 1982, Mr. Smythe was confronted about his conduct after the Irwin Trust compiled a secret report written by the Reverend Mark Ruston and the Reverend David Fletcher.
Striding out for the county's historic churches, Winchester is gearing up for the annual Ride and Stride on Saturday, September the 14th, when more than 30 historic churches will be open to the public. 17 churches will be open in the city itself, from the Quaker Meeting House in Colebrook Street to the Cathedral, and from the Church of St. Swithin to the University of Winchester Chapel. A similar number again will be open from All Saints in Barton Stacey to St. James in Woodmancote, and from St. Michael and All Angels in Bullington to Holy Trinity in Wanston. In total, over 400 historic churches throughout Hampshire and the Isle of Wight will be open to the public. Organised by Hampshire and the Islands Historic Churches Trust, Ride and Stride allows people to visit often old and beautiful churches with ancient bell towers, interiors reflecting our rich heritage, and often in beautiful settings. The Trust is a registered charity which raises funds for grants and loans towards the upkeep of 900 fully functioning historic church buildings, representing many different Christian traditions. Last year's Ride and Stride raised a record £65,000 for renovation and restoration, helping churches be fit for the community and to preserve them for future generations. Applications for funds doubled over the year before, with requests for modern facilities and repairs to the rich fabric, which is such a feature of historic churches. Anyone wishing to take part just needs to visit the Hampshire and Islands Historic Churches Trust page on the Virgin Money Giving website. Sign up to visit as many local churches as they like, by foot, bicycle, scooter, canoe, tandem, pushchair, or a car. This year, the churches taking part in Winchester are All Saints, Winchester Cathedral, Christ Church, Holy Trinity, St. Barnabas, St. Bartholomew, St. Cross with St. Faith, St. John the Baptist, St. John's Chapel, St. Lawrence, St. Matthew, St. Paul, St. Peter, St. Swithin, United Church University of Winchester Chapel, and the Quaker Meeting House. There will be 29 in Alresford and 16 in villages in and around Bishop's Waltham.
Twins celebrate matching results and top university places. One of the largest sixth form colleges in the country, Peter Simmons College, has celebrated after achieving a bumper set of A-level results with a total of 659 A-star grades. Among those to collect their results last Thursday were twins Chris and Patrick Lottery, who were celebrating twin results of 5 A-stars. The pair, who are 18 and from Southampton, said they woke up at 7 a.m. to see the results published online before coming to collect them. Patrick said it felt pretty good, while Chris added, "It's definitely better than I thought." Chris, who's going on to study at Churchill College, Cambridge University, achieved his top results in maths, further maths, physics, chemistry and the extended project qualification, EPQ, whilst his brother, on his way to study at Imperial College London, gained his results in maths, further maths, physics, Spanish and the EPQ. Overall, the college had an A-level pass rate of 98%, with 34% at A-star or A and 62% B or above. Also, all 272 vocational qualifications were successfully achieved, and more than 70% of grades awarded for the extended project qualification were A or A-star. Sarah Russell, principal, said she was thrilled at the achievements of her students. Ms. Russell said, "It's a very proud day for the college, the staff and the parents, but above all, it's a remarkably proud day for our students."
Police probe arson on lane near Oliver's Battery. Firefighters tackled a blaze in a van on a quiet country lane near Winchester. Arson is suspected as the cause of the fire that wrecked a white Renault van parked on Port Lane between Oliver's Battery and Hursley at around 11:30 p.m. last Wednesday. A crew from Winchester attended the fire close to Down Farm and next to the electricity substation. Crew manager Pete Bloomfield of Winchester Fire Station said the signs were clear that the fire had been started deliberately. Something was stuffed in the fuel pipe and it all smelt strongly of petrol. The vehicle was loaded with assorted items of rubbish. The crew tackled it with two breathing apparatus. their efforts were hampered because the vehicle was locked and they had to break in. A police spokesman said this incident is being treated as arson. The van is believed to have been stolen from outside an address in Wolf Close, Stanmore. An investigation is underway.
Coffee Room future looks uncertain. The future of a community facility in Ropley is dividing the village. Ropley Coffee Room has been used by villagers for more than 100 years, but its use has been uncertain. Its Board of Trustees has expressed a wish to dispose of the building on Church Street and close the fund, which was set up in the early 1920s by the Hagen Trust. A public meeting in the village last month was packed, with most people wanting the place to be retained for public use. Some villagers are unhappy that the proceeds of any sale may go to the church for rebuilding project following the major fire that destroyed St. Peter's in 2014. As a result of the feeling of the meeting, any sale has been put on hold. A villager, who asked not to be named, said, "A lot of villagers do not want the building to be sold. The trust was originally set up for the whole village." There is the issue of whether the coffee rooms will be required in the future, but that's 2 years away. It does need updating, but there's still money from the trust sale of Meadowside, the private house next door. One villager was reported to have told the public meeting, "The coffee room was meant to provide a provision for working men and boys in the village. It should not leave the parish and go to the diocese." But trustee Humphrey Carr told the meeting in the coffee room sale would not fund the church. "We can't sustain three buildings as a village asset." The parish priest, the Reverend Claire Wellham, told the meeting that not all the proceeds of a sale would go to the church. The parish council would also benefit. The situation is complicated because the coffee room's board of trustees currently has no chairman. The most recent chairman was Basil Lansdale, who recently stood down. An AGM for the board is due in September, when a new chairman will be elected. The Courtyard Village shop next door to the coffee room is also owned by the trust, but it is understood ownership would be transferred to the parish council. In the long term, Ropley will see St. Peter's Church built with new facilities and potential use as a community hall as well as the parish hall. When approached by the Chronicle, Miss Wellham did not want to discuss the situation. In an email, she said, "I hope you'll understand that any official comment should come from the chairperson. We hope to elect a new one at our next meeting." Following on from the public meeting, the decision has been taken not to go forward with the proposed application to change the trust, at this stage. So in a sense, there's no story at this point. As all, it's continuing as usual.
Royals youngsters play at national level. Winchester side boasts top South of England talent. Winchester City Royals Basketball Club were well represented at South of England level. Although this time of the year is basketball's off-season, it's also the time when the most talented players are selected for regional squads, 10 in total, to compete in national tournaments against the best players around the country. The South of England call-ups came at a good time for the Royals, with the Winchester-based club preparing to enter more teams into the National League ahead of the upcoming campaign. And that little piece is accompanied by a photograph of the team. There are 12 lads in their blue shorts and tops and yellow trim, all with the word South on the front. And also there are 4 adult men who are wearing black trainers and things. I suppose they are trainers, I suppose. Or managers, or whatever. Sorry.
Runners are Germany bound. A group of Winchester people will be running to its twin town in Germany. On August the 23rd, the team will set off to run a relay to Gießen, more than 540 miles and taking in five countries in 8 days. They start by going cross-country along the 100-plus miles of the South Downs Way. The run mirrors that of last October, when a group from Gießen ran a relay to Winchester. The Winchester athletes aim to do it a day quicker. The youngest is 11 and the oldest 67, and at least two of the team will run at any one time. The mayor, Councillor Eleanor Bell, will start the relay from the Broadway at 7 a.m. on Friday. The evening before, the runners will have a pasta supper at a local restaurant. Already, through sponsorship and donations, the group expects to raise more than £3,000 for the Winchester Hospice Appeal. A contingent of the Gießen runners will run the last 20 kilometres, with a police escort due for the last 3 kilometres, and the Mayor of Gießen will be at the finishing line, along with Winchester's former Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, and his wife Anne. They are due to arrive at 3 p.m. on Friday, August the 30th. Lead organiser Adrian Horton said, "It's quite a logistical undertaking, from finding and booking overnight accommodation in just the right places, planning a safe running route, and working out which sections of each runner we'll tackle. But we are confident that we will get there on time."
Colourful summer show. The weather may have been challenging at times this summer, but members of the Winchester Horticultural Society nevertheless succeeded in putting on a colourful late summer show at Badger Farm Community Centre. Quality made up for quantity over the many categories, and despite a small decrease in the number of competitors, there were sufficient entries of vegetables, fruit and soft fruit, as well as flowers and pot plants, for visitors to admire. Other categories for less green-fingered competitors included floral art, cakes, jam, handicrafts, photographs, and decorated stones, which appealed to several creative children as well as adults. Cups and trophies were presented by the Winchester Mayor, Councillor Eleanor Bell, who was accompanied by her husband. The Society meets on the second Wednesday of every month at the Winchester Club on Worthy Lane, SO23 7AB, at 7:30 p.m. The next meeting, on September the 11th, will feature a talk by Barry Newman on growing in raised beds. New members and visitors, welcome.
Four arrests after high-speed pursuit. Four men have been released from custody following a high-speed pursuit in the Meon Valley. Their arrests followed a chase involving several police cars and an Audi A3 that ended in Meonstoke. The police helicopter was also involved in the pursuit on Saturday. During the incident, the car is thought to have been involved in a hit-and-run with a Vauxhall Corsa in Bishop's Waltham that left three men with minor injuries. A police spokesman said, "One man was arrested after making off from a blue Audi A3 after the vehicle was in collision with a Vauxhall Corsa being driven by a member of the public in Free Street, Bishop's Waltham. Three other men also decamped but were detained after searches by officers, a police dog and police helicopter in the Corhampton and West Meon areas. The four men arrested have been released from custody, but remain under investigation. Detectives are also investigating reports of two assaults on police officers in Free Street, Bishop's Waltham, on Saturday, August the 10th. Neither officer sustained serious injuries. Johnny Delaney, 20, of Fulmer Close, Richmond on Thames, has been charged with assaulting PCs Samantha Allen and Faye Kappelman and dangerous driving on the A32 and Free Street. He denied the charges and was remanded in custody until September the 12th.
Warning from shop and club. Two community facilities are telling residents to use it or lose it after struggling in recent months. Twyford Social Club and Waltham Chase Post Office are both facing financial difficulty and are urging locals to use their businesses before it's too late. The Social Club in Queen Street is now closed on a Sunday and Monday to see if staff wages will be reduced to an affordable level, and if that fails, it will close for good. Staff at the post office are asking for 150 people to use the shop daily and spend around £5 each, and say that this will be enough revenue to keep the store open. A spokesman from Twyford Social Club said, despite the improvements to the decor supported by a generous injection of money from the Twyford Community Project, loans and free labour from members, the social club is in dire financial situation. There are rooms available for rental, but there are not enough take-ups to make ends meet and pay the wages of a caretaker and bar staff. It is difficult to find out honestly why more don't use the venue. The committee really don't want this space to be lost to the village, but the building cannot be run without income. Members of the club are now asking people to complete a survey to understand why custom has fallen. This can be accessed online. And I won't read out that very long address online because I don't understand it anyway. A spokesperson from Waltham Chase Post Office said, back in 2011, we took over the village shop and post office, and we've been investing a lot of time, effort and money to keep it going. We've worked extremely hard to make it a success for our little village store. We've been lucky to live amongst you and make new friends, and we're very grateful for your loyalty and continued support. Like all businesses, we survive on your custom. And to secure our future in the village, we need to increase our turnover. If only 150 customers, we serve approximately 175 to 200 daily, could spend just £5 each day, this would do it.
Hundreds of animal lovers turn out for charity show. Animal lovers from across Hampshire gathered in Branbridge on Sunday for the annual St Francis Animals Welfare Charity Fun Day. The event, which saw hundreds of attendees across the day, included an 18-class dog show, with the competition spread across two rings, and the categories included Best Puppy, Golden Oldies, Handsomest Dog, Fancy Dress, Best Child Handler, and The Happiest Family. Money raised will now go towards the charity, which cares for, rehabilitates, and rehomes domestic animals, including dogs, cats, rabbits, chicken, cage birds, various small animals, and reptiles. And this short article has four excellent photographs, two of lovely dogs, a sort of brown spaniel-like dog, and a very handsome, probably rather elderly golden retriever, and then all the people who look after them at St Francis Animal Welfare.
That charming extract brings us to the end of our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors Sue Frayn, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Bye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be quite hot over the bank holiday, so take care of yourselves. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.